Track 5. We now jump from back in the days to the 21st century, and from the train journeys you've followed for the last few months, to a camper van in the Orkneys. Here is Alison Applin to tell us more.
My husband and I have a camper van. It's a very small camper van, just a converted Renault traffic van, in fact. So it's not much longer or wider than a car, just higher so that we can stand up in it. Orkney and Shetland in June seemed an enticing prospect. Long light evenings, lots of history, peace and quiet, and plenty of interesting wildlife. Quite an adventure, in fact, involving several ferry journeys, two of them overnight. But of course, it's a long way to go by road, so we decided we'd take a few days to get there. The ferry to Orkney goes from a place called Gills Bay, about 3 miles west of John O'Groats, and we allowed ourselves 3 overnight stops. We arrived in John O'Groats to be greeted by driving rain, strong winds, and a temperature more suited to February. It was dismal. In order to escape these inclement conditions, we took refuge in the local pub, which proudly advertised itself as the most northerly pub on the British mainland, and where they brewed their own beer. Despite being brewed only about 20 yards from where we were sitting, the beer was extortionately expensive, but at least the place was warm. As with all such places, there's a sign at John O'Groats which tells you how far you are from other places, such as Land's End, New York or Paris. It also told us that Orkney was 8 miles away and Shetland was 152 miles away. 152 miles? That's practically the other side of the Arctic Circle, I thought. It isn't, of course, but it's certainly true that Lerwick, the capital of Shetland, is nearer to Bergen in Norway than it is to Edinburgh. The next morning started more promisingly weather-wise, with a bit of brightness. But the conditions soon deteriorated and the wind got up again and the rain returned. Now, I am not a great lover of ferry journeys, and as we sat on the quayside and watched the Orkney ferry come in, I thought it looked a bit wobbly. "No, it isn't," said my husband. "It's not moving around at all." Well, he's done a lot of sailing and he's not fazed by rough seas, so I wasn't entirely encouraged by his remarks. But on board it was fine, of course, and on that crossing of about 1.25 hours, I was the warmest I had been since leaving home, and indeed the warmest I would probably be until I returned. And so we arrived on Orkney's main island and made our way to our first campsite, where I'm convinced we were given the most exposed pitch on the site, at the top end of a field, where we were in the firing line of the wind and the rain. But despite this, we were determined to get on and see all the historic sites, ancient and not so ancient, which Orkney is famous for, and which are to be marvelled at. The Orkney archipelago is made up of about 70 islands, some of them absolutely tiny, and not all of them inhabited. Although there is evidence of human activity dating back 15,000 years, the first people actually to settle in Orkney were hunter-gatherers who arrived about 8,000 years ago. These and all subsequent inhabitants have left considerable evidence for us to see today, and the most impressive and awe-inspiring sites are those which date from the Neolithic period and which were granted UNESCO World Heritage status in 1999. Skara Brae is Britain's earliest known Neolithic village, dating back more than 5,000 years. It predates the pyramids of Giza by 600 years and Stonehenge by 1,000 years, and it was occupied from 3,100 to 2,500 BCE. We visited on yet another windy day, with the rain coming in short, sharp squalls, but this only added to the haunting atmosphere of the site. The open-air location on the edge of a bay is fragile, so one has to follow walkways above the site, which give excellent views of the layout. The site consists of the remains of 8 houses, each with a single room entered by a roofed passageway. Each house had the same layout, with stone beds to the side, a central hearth, and a stone dresser consisting of 2 stone shelves, remarkably resembling our modern design of shelving, all incredibly preserved. It's amazing to think that this site remained undiscovered for millennia until it was revealed in 1850 when a storm tore away the turf covering the dunes on the edge of the bay. Equally fascinating is the chambered cairn of Maes Howe, a tomb or passage grave built 5,000 years ago and today covered by a grassy mound in the middle of a field. The mound contains a 30-foot-long narrow stone passageway leading to a stone-lined chamber with side cells. But what I hadn't realised was that it might have been 30 feet long, but it was only about 4 feet high, so one had to more or less bend double to walk through it. Now, as well as not being a great lover of ferry journeys, I'm no good with enclosed spaces either, and my first reaction was that I just couldn't do this. I stood outside and watched the others go nose to tail into the passageway, feeling like such a wimp. When they'd all disappeared, I peered in and I could hear the guide talking, so eventually I plucked up the courage to go in and made my way along to the chamber itself. The walls of the chamber are formed of flagstone and built around 4 standing stones, each in a corner. But here's the really interesting thing. The passageway and the main chamber were constructed to align with the setting sun at the winter solstice and for 3 weeks either side of it. At these times, the light of the sun shines down the passageway, steadily moving towards the back of the chamber and illuminating a side cell at the rear. How did they do it? One can only assume that these ancient peoples were so attuned to the natural world, to the movement of the sun and the phases of the moon, to the seasons and to the light and the darkness, that they lived their lives in conjunction with these natural phenomena. I was spellbound and was very pleased that I'd been brave enough to go in. But you'll probably guess that I was the first to head back down that passageway and out at the end of the visit. Next time I'll continue the journey with further ancient and then more modern historical sites. Plus, will we get to see dolphins and the fabled orcas?
Thank you, Alison. We look forward to hearing the next instalment, and we hope the sun will come out.